A very good afternoon. It is Dublin City FM.
It is Friday. It is 3 p.m. and it is Peter coming to you from the Botanic Gardens.
And it is Niall here in the studio.
And welcome to another Sod Show.
Indeed. Welcome to the Sod Show. From the studios of Dublin City FM, on FM, Fridays at 3 p.m. and anytime worldwide in podcast, it's Dublin's only garden radio show, in association with greensacks.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. This is The Sod Show.
From the Botanic Gardens. Niall, have you ever been here?
Indeed I was there, Peter, very recently too. I was there with my better half as we were looking for eggs in the big egg hunt of Dublin. But anyway, we're going to go straight to you now. And who are you there to talk to today?
In my company is a lady known on Twitter as @triploidtree. Trina is your real name. Do you want to introduce yourself? Tell people a little bit of what you're about and what you do, I suppose. You might say for a living, but also as a hobby. Is that?
Yeah, well, as a living is quite an exaggeration. I'm a PhD student out in DCU and I work with looking at sugars on the surface of cells. And as I say, as a living, they don't exactly pay PhD students amazing, but at the end of the day, we do get something really nice out of the far end. So I'm interested in science, just science, lots of science, science all over the place, physics, chemistry, maths. You name it, I'm interested in it. And while I work primarily with mammalian stuff in work, there's all sorts of other things I'm interested in. So around my house, I actually have pots and pots of plants. Most of them are pot-bound. That's grand. It means they won't get any bigger. I can afford to move to another house with the same number of windowsills. A lot of what else I'm growing around the house are these mother and hens. They're basically these little rosettes that start sprouting out, baby rosettes, and they're fantastic and they grow everywhere. And if you really want, you can cut a baby one off, hand it to your mother, hand it to someone else, and they'll be delighted. They have a plant that grows hardy, great for moving house, fantastic. Turns out these guys are related. So I have an entire collection of plants that are actually cousins of each other. Just because I've gone looking on the internet, and they're great. They're hardy, man. If you want to keep something in your house that you're not sure you'll remember to water, anything from the Crassulacea. Apparently some of them are hard to keep, but not the ones I've managed to find in the shops in Ireland. So I thought it was quite fascinating that all the things in our house are related. So we have a couple of more plants in our garden. So the love of my life, he keeps a Venus flytrap. Now, I love the Venus flytrap. They're cool. Don't go sticking ribbons in them because they will die once they close up their mouth. And if you kind of don't feed them enough and you keep closing them, it wastes energy on them. We were looking at them kind of going, these guys are deadly. They're little bog plants. They're fantastic for people who can't take care of plants. You overwater them. It's what you do. You overwater them. So we were kind of going, I wonder how they work. The rain doesn't close them up. Because we left it outside in the back garden and it was really good in the summer because, you know, bog plants, Ireland, we have lovely summers. They had happy little pink mouths. But we were looking at it and kind of go, well, when the rain lashes down on them, they don't close up the way they do when you play with the ribbon on them or when you actually catch a fly. So we're going, how does this work? Again, back to the internet, source of all knowledge. Turns out that these tiny little hairs, a couple of hairs on each leaf, when they're moved, cause sort of calcium to be released from the cells below. Now, anyone who's familiar with muscles and humans will realise, oh, this sounds awful familiar. You know, if your nerve ending goes off, your arm is going to move, there's a whole bunch of calcium gets sent into the muscles and the muscles kind of go, hey, I know what we're meant to do now. Turns out Venus flytrap is working on effectively the same principles. If only one or two hairs are tapped, there's not enough calcium knocking around. The leaves kind of go, maybe not today. There's no point catching something small. There's no point catching rain. But if you catch about four of them, you hit this threshold. There's enough calcium released and the leaves start to close. And as well, if it's a raindrop, obviously it's not going to be hitting loads of them at the same time, and it's definitely not going to be struggling. On the other hand, insects struggle. Keep hitting off these things, more and more calcium, it closes faster. Seriously, get a Venus flytrap, watch it close. And the science behind it is actually fascinating. So while I've studied mussels in school and I haven't studied Venus flytraps, now that we've got it looked up about them, it's actually, like, all of this stuff seems to work on the same principles. Science is just amazing. So, yeah, you can tell I'm excited about these things. What else do we have grown in the house? Oh, we've got chilli plants. They're pot-bound, but that's okay. But they're producing chilli plants. And we're looking at it kind of going, oh, wow, do you know what we can get from this? You know, we can go distill our own capsaicin. We're like, no, there's only one chilli appeared on the entire plant. And we're learning a lot about root-bound things and about pests in the house and, you know, it's quite complex, but I actually find it really fascinating. I keep explaining to people that, oh, you see these plants in my kitchen, you know, this is what that plant does. This is an agave. The agave is cool. Our agave comes from, it's, so the agave is beautiful. They're big. They grow in Mexico. Turns out they grow really well in Cork. So in my friend's garden, her mum had this beautiful agave, right? It's about a metre and a half wide. And my mum thought it was fantastic. So she went down and they put off these kind of runner baby agaves. So my mum took a baby agave off her and she took it home. She potted it up. And then my mum's one put out a baby agave. So I've taken that home and I potted it up and I keep potting it on. But I'm going to have to root bind it because otherwise I'm not going to be able to move house with the thing. But it's just absolutely fascinating that you have these clones. They're plants. It's the same plant. It's the same genetic material. They're clones. And when you say clone to people, I'm talking in science. People kind of look at me in horror, kind of going, oh, Jesus, you know, we'll have 50 of the same person running around. You're like, no. Clone just means having the same genetic material. It doesn't necessarily mean we're all going to be the exact same person with the exact same personalities, wearing the same clothes and all listening to the same awful TV programs. So it's absolutely fascinating. Plants can be clones. Real easy. It's so easy for plants to be clones. Whereas for humans to be clones, it's incredibly complicated. And sorry to say, lads, the technology, nowhere near anytime soon. Not a hope, lads. Can't grow your own bodies just yet. But like, a lot of it does come back to it. And what I find really fascinating is when I'm talking to people on Twitter, as I said, I study human cells and I study how human cells die, which is very interesting. So there's programmed cell death where they package themselves up all neatly and the immune system comes and hands off little pieces of it and it's all tidied away. And this happens. Your body's turning over these cells all the time. And I'm talking to these plant scientists on Twitter and they're like, oh yeah, so we're looking for, you know, equivalent mechanisms in plants, and they're finding it and they're having trouble buying what I can buy easily because so few people study plants that it can be really difficult to get the right reagents for studying them. And I'm kind of sitting there going, oh sure, I have about 50 of them to choose from a catalogue. And they're like, no, we have one and it's not really good. And I feel really sorry for them because they're actually doing really cool work. And it's absolutely fascinating because, I mean, anytime I listen to the people from Chagask, oh my God, like, how can you not love the people who gave us the rooster? I mean, they're fantastic. And anytime I've ever heard them talking about milk or potatoes, and yeah, we live in Ireland and these are what they study for obvious reasons. I don't know why people aren't into it more. I was in work there during the DCU Open Day and, you know, we were upstairs kind of going, oh, all the young people are downstairs, grumpy. But we have to go for lunch. Oh, we'll have to go through them. So that was grand. We went down to the ground floor to go through them. And DCU has a new BSc in horticulture. And that was fine. And so, you know, at the Open Day, they're all pitching their courses. And I wandered past the table. And what do they have? Only about 20 beautiful specimens up from the Botanic Gardens of insectivorous plants. Oh my God. And I'm looking at these things kind of going, I want one of them. Look at the size of their pitcher plants. I mean, they're just cool. You look them up, you kind of see how do they digest them. Some of them actively secrete enzymes to digest the flies. Some of them kind of have bacteria on board that do it for them and they just absorb what's left over. You know, it's real handy. It's a real great example of symbiosis. It's an example of digestive enzymes in action in the real world, which isn't your stomach sac because you're sick of hearing that from home ec and biology and it's the first thing you learn. But actually, no, we should be looking at pitcher plants. Pitcher plants are really cool. And then there's other guys, you know, where they just get stuck on these sticky leaves and they're trapped down there and the thing is going nowhere and the plant can just slowly, ever so slowly, take what it needs from the flies. And it's the same way your own body digests it. Because they're really interesting. Because they're living in bogs. Now, bogs to you and me look kind of really rich. They're full of green stuff, you know. The soil is wonderful. There's loads of water. But actually, they can be really nutrient poor for some particular minerals. So this is the reason why these bog plants collect insects. Because insects are really handy sources of nutrition. So the same way you and I would eat eggs or beef, they pick up insects because, you know, what's the point in trying really hard to get energy when these things are wandering around the place and you can just digest them at will, you know?
Are you like the nuttery professor for Ireland and horticulture and plants a little bit? And I say that in a very jovial, affectionate kind of a way.
I don't know. Maybe we can get more people interested because it'll be handy if other people get interested. So I don't have to be interested in absolutely everything, you know, I can pass it off and get someone else to tell me about this stuff.
Do you think that the word horticulture, botany, I know we spoke about this with Claire O'Connell. Do you think there's a bit where botany isn't sexy? It's not attractive. Is there reasons behind that? Is it the teachers? Is it the associations of old need to reinvent themselves? Is there... Or is it just fine as it is and everything goes in cycles? Or am I entirely wrong and off the mark? Maybe the RHS and what they said in that, you know, what did they, I think I'm open to correction this, was it 80% of under 25s have no interest in horticulture?
I'd believe that. Because when I was under 25, I probably didn't have as much of an interest. It's kind of hard to figure out where it comes from, because when people are looking at science, what they're shown on the telly and what have you, it tends to be space. So people are interested in space, but they're not necessarily interested in studying space. People are interested in human bodies, so biology does be quite popular. Now, a lot of people don't realise that, you know, within studying plants, there's actually a hell of a lot of biology. A lot of it's carried over. There's a lot of the same mechanisms between humans, plants, animals. Insects are fascinating too, by the way. And the question is it that we see all these beautiful wildlife programs, you know, David Attenborough narrating them, and we haven't seen the private life of plants often enough, which actually, go rewatch The Private Life of Plants. It's brilliant. It's The Private Life or Secret Life. Oh, you have to, it's fantastic anyway. And the question is, like, do people just forget about botany when they're pitching these things in the public? Like, you know, when we're reading the newspapers, I don't remember seeing many articles. Most of my hearing from Chagas is when I've gone to a conference and I, and these guys are giving a seminar and you're like, oh my God, that's really cool. Why don't I know about this? And a lot of people like to lay blame at us scientists for not actually pitching stuff appropriately to get people out and interested in what people do see is basically what's passed on to the media. And whether or not young people are looking at the media and saying, oh, this is an interesting career, or whether their parents are looking at the media and kind of going, oh, did you know now if you went into horticulture, you could be earning an awful lot of money now. And there's probably a lot of people to blame, to be fair. You know, we could put it at the Royal Society for not saying, well, look, if you actually go into horticulture, here's examples of careers. You know, you don't just have to be planting plants in a garden. You can actually be studying them. You can be improving them. You can work in, you know, agricultural plants. They're extremely important, like, you know, economically. Just because it's what we eat every day. I mean, we'll go back to things like the rooster. Oh my God, the group that put together the rooster are just absolutely amazing, you know? And they're not given half as much credit as they should be. So maybe we're not given, you know, horticulturalists and plant scientists and botanists as much credit as they should. A lot, yeah. We come back to the, you know, when I was a kid, what was botany to me? It was going down to the arboretum in Fota and not being able to read the signs really high up on the tree. So I looked at those giant insects that they have down there. They're really huge blue bottles. They might have been bigger because I was a child, but yeah, it's a complicated one. And unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to solve it on my own. But I do like telling people how interesting plants are because they are really cool. And when people come over to my house, I have something to tell them about every single plant on my windowsills, you know, and I don't have enough windowsills. Well, I don't have enough south-facing windowsills, let's be honest about it. I have plenty of windowsills north-facing, but we can't do much with them for the most part. You could ask me the same about just science in general and I'll still come back kind of going, we could do this, but I don't know.
Going to take a wee little pause there, head for Song of the Week. Niall, what have you got in store for me? Something a little bit Trina, bright, bubbly, infectious, delightful.
Infectious.
Not in that kind of a way. Niall, it's over to you in the studio, mate.
Well, Peter and Trina, thanks for that. Bright, bubbly, infectious, chirpy. They all make me think of one particular performer and the fact that it's St. Patrick's weekend. This weekend, we might as well go with something Irish. Sharon Shannon on The Sod Show with The Blackbird. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Niall. By the way, you got any news for me, Niall?
Yes, I do have news for you, Peter. This week's news goes like this. And the Airtricity Garden Festival is back for 2013, but it's moved. It's going to the lawns and parklands of Hillsborough Castle in Northern Ireland. Northern Irish Minister of State Mike Penning spoke recently about it and welcomed the move, saying that the gardens there are very beautiful and that he looks forward to seeing them full of visitors seeking advice from all the gardening experts, making their purchases, of course, and enjoying the show and the gardens. Well, visitors will be able to enjoy the show's displays and activities in the unique setting of the castle's private gardens and have the rare opportunity to step inside one of Northern Ireland's most iconic buildings, Hillsborough Castle. Parking will be provided on site, and that's organised by the show's nominated charity for 2013, Cystic Fibrosis Trust. There'll be exhibits, displays and performances throughout the parkland, and for more information go to gardenshowireland.com. Now, as we covered on the Sod Show before, Ireland's very first tulip portrait will be on show this spring in the very place where Peter is right now meeting Trina, the National Botanic Gardens. It's a portrait of Irish legend James Joyce and measures some 6 metres across. This green work of art is the result of a Dutch-Irish horticultural cooperation with support from the Dutch Embassy. 23,000 tulip and grape hyacinth bulbs will make up the portrait. And to celebrate the blooming of the tulip portrait, the Embassy of the Kingdom of the Netherlands is organising a series of lectures in cooperation with the National Botanic Gardens. Lectures will touch on a wide variety of themes such as innovation in horticulture, the life of James Joyce, and, in fact, freedom of artistic rights. To attend, check out the netherlandsembassy.ie. And don't forget to plan your own visit to the National Botanic Gardens this spring to see James Joyce's portrait in bloom. It's just inside the entrance next to the cafe there. And don't forget, that's not the only thing you'll want to see there. There is loads more to see in the National Botanic Gardens. And you can purchase your own Molly Bloom or Mary McAleese tulips. Just contact Beech Hill Bulbs Limited or call 057-9322-956. And of course, all of that will be up on the show notes on sodshow.com. Going to go back to the Botanic Gardens very shortly, but just for now, our usual call out to any of you who want to have a story featured on the Sod Show. Getting in touch here is quite easy. Just head to sodshow.com and click onto the contact page. There you'll find all the details for how to phone, mail or tweet us. It's really simple. Right, let's go back to the National Botanic Gardens and Peter.
Part two of the Sod Show, still in my company, is Trina O'Connell, no relation to Claire, a little bit like Luke Donegan, no relation at all, not even a distant cousin, but still a very good looking fellow like myself. Trina, pop quiz round, do you have names for your plants that reside in your home?
Only their common names and occasionally the Latin name when I can try and pronounce it.
You don't call them Mary or Brian or Paul or Jimmy?
No, nothing gets names. The car didn't get named, the motorcycle didn't get names, and the plants in the windowsills, yeah, no. You're the pop-bound chili, you're the small chili, you're the big chili. You're the pachyphytum, because that's the name of the plant. You're the ones that were rescued from the kitchen before the green fly set in. You're the ones that are in the kitchen with the green fly. You're the agave that came from... This is a long descendancy from the agave when I do refer to it.
I spoke to David Shaw of the Safari Trust, who bred his own range of potatoes, and I spoke to David and I asked him the question, does he have a shed down the back that spontaneously combusts every now and again? Does he do research on the kitchen table, on the coffee table, on the desk that should be the office, and also in his office that actually is his office? Are you a little bit of that?
I'm actually pretty good for keeping my work in work, but I do a lot of other reading around at home. I crochet, and I crocheted a lot of cactus plants for my mum for Christmas, because my mum collects cactus plants, and everyone used to say to her, you've 4 kids, you've 100 cactus plants in your house, you've 4 children, and she's like, uh-huh, but they only touch them once, and they learn. She got a bunch of cactus plants for Christmas. So yeah, I don't just do science, I do crochet and I do bake, and my plants sit there on the windowsill while I try and figure out what particular infection they have this week, and whether or not they have to go into the regular bin because the compost bin won't take them, and whether or not I should just take them in and autoclave them in work and make sure there's absolutely nothing growing on them, including the plant itself.
Are you a member of any horticultural or botanical associations?
I'm afraid I am not.
Can I ask you why?
I suppose as someone who just grows plants in her windowsill, it never even occurred to me that I would be useful as a member. I would be involved in certain other societies, you know, like getting women into science or just the hackerspace in Dublin. TOG is pretty cool. But as regards horticulture, it's always seemed to me as something like I do at home and I tell people about, and I tell people that they should grow their own, because spider plants are hardy, man. They just keep growing. Even if you forget to water them a month later, they'll keep growing. But it never occurred to me that I would be regarded as someone who grows plants worthy of a society membership.
So when you hear horticulture and botany, do you think of this? Or do you think of this?
Oh gosh. I'm going to come out full straight and say, yeah, if you say botany to me, for the most part, I will hear Pachelbel kind of floating away gently, classical music, all those neatly labelled plants with the beautiful flowers, and it's a nice walk around on a Sunday. But when you start talking, if you start saying something closer to plant science, oh, forget Procol Harum, we're going full metal on this stuff, like. Because it's really cool. It's a tough one. I think when people say horticulture, they kind of imagine someone who's growing plants more for a living. And when you say botany, a lot of people imagine this guy collecting plants to grow in his botanical gardens or an arboretum or, you know, to put into a museum somewhere. Whereas actually it is a lot richer. And now that I spend more time talking to people who do work in botany and plant science in general, I kind of feel bad for all of my, you know, misinterpretations of what botany really is and horticulture and the whole gamut. Like,
how much would you spend on anything to do with, apart from buying vegetables in a supermarket kind of thing, how much would you spend on horticulture, let's say, per annum?
Oh gosh, a bag of compost and a few new pots and two or three plants a year, I'd say, because the windowsills are getting tighter and tighter and I need to stop repotting them because they're getting bigger and bigger. Gonna go with €80 a year.
When was the last outing you had on your own for no apparent reason to anything that was plant or horticultural related? So this would include parks, and apart from today, obviously.
I probably was down in the Botanic Gardens a month ago. Yeah, I go to the Botanic Gardens a lot, and I go to the odd time I go to the garden centre, because himself kind of looks at me when I want to go around and look at every single plant and say, right, is this going to be slug proof if I leave it in the garden? Is it going to be green fly proof if I leave it with the poor green fly bitten plants in the kitchen? So yeah, it's been a month since I've been in the Botanic Gardens, and I'd say it's probably summer since I was last properly in a garden centre.
So for those listening at home, you might be gathering where this is going and why I'm talking to Trina in the first place. Well, number one, she has an understanding scientifically of behind the scenes. So you might say it's a little bit of it down to the left-hand side and back up the right-hand side, the cousin of what we spoke with Claire O'Connell. If you're unsure of this, Claire's interview, head to sideshow.com. We'll have the link up there, and that will include the interview that we did with Claire. But the whole thing is how do you get those not interested in plant science or the study of botany or the study of plants or the study of horticulture into it? Is there something that the associations, or is it the colleges should be doing, Trina? Is there change that is needed? Is it the Professor Brian Cox of horticulture is required? Is that, does that make you squee ever so slightly? Is there a refresh, a rehash? Is there something required, or is it no, you just keep plodding along, you keep it same as is?
Well, I'm not an expert in the area, but I do think we should see more of it. I think the media in general should be more open to stories about plants. You know, they kind of assume what people are interested in, but you know, they can make people interested in stuff as well. As regards the colleges, like having cool plants out on their open day, it really can't hurt, and just kind of making more aware of what their scientists are doing, because their scientists are doing a lot of very interesting research as well, and it's not always out there, not just the plant stuff, everything. And the societies, these are the people who keep professional horticulturists on their books. Why aren't they sending them out to schools kind of going, if you become a horticulturist, this is what you could be doing, you know, and all the different careers that stem from it. Because it's not just planting plants, it's not just landscaping, it's not just working in a lab. There's a whole range of things that you could be doing. And by getting people in and saying, well, look, I studied horticulture, or I didn't study horticulture, but I moved into the area anyway, it's really great to have people from the field come in and say, yeah, no, and if you're interested in money, this is how much I earn. And if you're interested in happiness, we're the happiest type of people in the world. Which I'm kind of jealous, actually, of that particular statistic. So there's a few ways of just getting people interested. Some people are interested in money, tell them how much money they'll earn. Some people are interested in a good career that's interesting, tell them that. Some people are interested in working outdoors, tell them that. Some people don't like working outdoors, tell them they don't have to work outdoors to do horticulture. It's pitching to everybody, not just young people, because they'll go home and talk to their parents, and if their parents don't care, well, you know, their parents are going to pass that on as well. So we got to get everyone interesting, and we have to put David Attenborough's Private Life of Plants on repeat every week so that we've all got it drummed into us, because it's actually a beautifully shot programme. But also, it's just really cool what crazy plants there are in this world and how they work.
It's kind of funny when you come to the Botanic Gardens, middle of, how would you describe it? Start of spring is probably the best description. Snowdrops are just coming up. They're in flower. The daffodils are protruding through the lawns. The leaves haven't fully formed on the trees. I had problems parking in the full car park of the National Botanic Gardens today and ended up parking inappropriately, which mildly upset one of the OPW employees. It's kind of nice, on the other hand, when you stand in the middle of the National Botanic Gardens and you get somebody like Trina, who, I say nutty professor, I really mean somebody who is more in love, passionate, delightful to speak to, somebody who I've listened to read me botanical Latin bedtime stories, if they ever existed, all evening long, with a cup of hot cocoa and my fluffy slippers on, that kind of a picture. It's the kind of person you want teaching you when you're 14 years of age about ye olde type Irish English poetry. And I've always said that in horticulture, there are two types. And this is where I cross analogize, contrast between ye olde English poetry, a subject that can be boring. And when I was growing up, we always had that one teacher who said, you know, this is the theory of the poem, this is the theme of the poem, this is what the poet was thinking, write it down, reproduce it in an exam, and you will ace it. And I was always the hand that said, but how do you know, or why, or one of them. And we also, and everybody, I hope, can identify with this, the other teacher who would turn around and say, close your eyes, reads a poem to you and then says, what do you think? And I think that there will always be that childlike imagination, there will always be that abstract artist, there will always be the one who paints the Machiavellian type art. Again, something that can be extremely boring, and it's just kind of wonderful to speak to somebody who has that heart flutter extra beat when they see a Venus flytrap open and close, and also has an understanding of what is reality as versus, no, there's nothing wrong with our society, horticulturally in brackets. Niall, back to you in the studio.
My God, Peter, you're all very deep and philosophical this week, and we're just bang out of time. Join us again anyway next week, same time, same channel, same podcast, for The Sod Show, when myself and Peter will return. Until then, whatever you're doing in the great outdoors and whoever you're doing it with, enjoy yourselves and take care.